Welcome, everybody, to the Reflex Blues Show. We are here at Bozell here in Omaha, Nebraska. Donovan Beery, I'm here with my host, co-host Ben Luders.
Hello, everybody.
And we have brought, it's Kim Nicholson and Jerry Stoner, who you guys may remember from the last episode of AMC's The Pitch. Almost the stars of the episode there, you two were, wow. Right?
Well, I don't know about that. Thank you. Say hello, Jerry.
Hi.
All right. So what we want to talk about is, we normally talk more design, but we're going into the evil, seedy world of advertising for an episode here, because we finally got a reality show that's somewhat about our profession, even though it is about advertising, and it's called The Pitch. It follows Mad Men. It's actually one of the only reality shows I watch right now. Well, it's the only hour-long reality show I watch. Everything else, like half-hour things, I don't even think.
I don't do reality shows.
You don't do The Bachelor?
So.
I gave up on that.
My wife watches Say Yes to the Dress or something.
Oh,
I tried
really?
Watching a little bit of that, and I was like, no.
I get drawn into sections of a lot of them due to spouses' viewing habits. But I don't count those as ones that I necessarily
right, exactly.
admit to watching.
16 and pregnant, those kinds of things.
Right, right. So The Pitch has just started airing, and Bozell, you guys were up against Muse from, is it Culver City, is it where they're from?
Right.
Yep. Is that near San Francisco?
Los Angeles.
Yeah. Okay.
Hollywood. I used to live out there, so.
Oh, really?
I know exactly where it is. I worked right down the street from there.
Wow. Were you guys familiar with your, I guess in this way, the competitor?
Nemesis.
The competitor's agency before you guys
no,
went in?
Not really.
Not at all. I didn't know about them at all until we met them.
Mm-hmm. And we did what everybody else did as soon as we left.
Go to the website. check it out. Yep.
This is the one thing that I find is a little bit weird about the show. And I don't know, because I don't work for an ad agency, so we don't do like pitches like this. But when you go out to your client originally on the show, they actually put you in the same room with who you're pitching against.
That never happens.
It's really awkward. In the 30 years I've been doing this, I have never walked into a room and had another agency there.
Wow.
Ever.
I mean, I think one time we were bidding on a job and they had it where they were telling us what they wanted, and like I was in the waiting room and somebody came out and I was
right.
going in. I've seen that, but I've never.
Well, there's state contracts where they have the Q&A session, which everybody shows up. But that's it's not the same thing as a briefing like this.
Exactly.
It was kind of awkward.
They played up the awkward on
they
the show,
did.
But was it that awkward?
No.
Or wasn't that
no,
awkward?
We walked in and we're like, hey, how are you? You know, we're chatting.
But yeah,
until the client
they pause there just to make it, awkward.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
No.
Right.
So what was were you guys okay with the final, like you guys had no, until it was on air, you guys didn't see anything. You just had cameras floating around.
Yeah, I mean, I felt good. I felt good about how it was presented. I mean, you miss a lot of stuff. A lot of the behind the scenes things that certain people did and said that led up to this. It's a real team effort. So it comes across sometimes as being, we just came up with this idea and then went and pitched it. But there's so much it goes into understanding who the consumer is and what their behaviors are and why we come up with this idea, all that kind of stuff. So, but I still feel like we were well represented. Mm-hmm. And some of the people, they kind of had a villain, and Scott's not a villain.
I don't think anybody here
would have said, oh my gosh, yeah, Scott's the worst person ever.
No.
But at the same time, even Brian, when he said Scott's an arrogant asshole, well, Scott was right there. Scott was there when they filmed that, so
right.
he knows that he's got this, you know, this point of view. He likes to share what he feels.
Right.
There was a lot of, though, that I was a little disappointed because I didn't know he felt that way, and it explains a little more the tension. Like when I'd walk in the room, he wouldn't say a lot of these things to me.
So you didn't see that.
In this case, for those viewers who don't watch it, Scott. Oh, there's going to be a lot of spoilers in this, shocker.
Yeah.
So Scott wasn't on board with one of the ideas you guys were pitching.
Yes.
Well, and it wasn't even that. It's just his nature to say, okay, think about that. Is that really going to work? I'm not sure. I mean, he's kind of like the ultimate devil's advocate. That's always the role he plays. And he did that from the very beginning. So, of course, he was cast as a protagonist. You know, it makes better TV. Yeah. Strategy isn't all that exciting to watch on TV because it's kind of boring and redundant. So the drama is what they were looking for.
Making a story.
Yeah,
out of it,
exactly.
Creating that boring.
I mean, they took 100 hours of film down into 18 minutes for us. So
it worked.
Yeah.
Damn, I wouldn't want to be that editor.
No kidding.
That would be tough.
Yeah. I remember watching that and I was like, man, they gotta fire that guy. But I mean, that's editing. But
yeah, it's editing.
Playing something.
It really is.
Yeah.
He's brilliant. He's a smart guy. But yeah.
And he actually, the funny thing is he said so many really wicked funny. He's a real quick wit. Mm-hmm. Wicked funny stuff all throughout the pitch, and none of that was there. It just it's kind of disappointing. I know he probably feels
bad,
disappointed.
Sure.
About that.
Yeah.
I think for me that my whole point of it is to help understand is that there's a point at which you have to get on board. You can't. Mm-hmm. All of us can sit there and pick apart any idea, and it's not black and white. There's a point at which you say, okay, this is where we're going. So this is the train. Jump
the
on
train's
or
moving.
Get off.
Yeah.
And had I known, I mean, some of that stuff. Had I known he was. To the point at which he was just discarding everything they were saying. There's a point at which you can't be that negative. You have to. It's good to bring those things up, but you have to. All right. Well, what's your solution? You need to give me solutions, not just problems. And I think that's the part of it that was. Fortunately, though, he did turn around and says, "Okay, I guess I need to move forward." And he was a great help. And again, he presented it in the pitch, and you didn't see any of that.
Absolutely.
You didn't see anybody but you at the pitch.
And now, again, for our listeners, there was two different pitches that you guys were kind of working on. One was this Todd, and then one was the
they were connected.
They were connected.
And that's what nobody saw.
Initially, and what they didn't show is he says, "I want a rally cry." So it just looked like they just want a rally cry. Well, that wasn't the case. The big issue was we don't want to use traditional media. This is going to be a kind of a real grassroots online kind of thing. How can we leverage
they didn't
people
have the budget
out there? Right. So there's no money. So how do we leverage the people out there to maybe start sharing something and do something a little covert that way? So that was our idea. And that was the big discussion. Well, how do you know that's going to catch on? How do you know people are going to, they're not going to do that. We need to push it with money. Well, we don't know that. We hope that it's an idea that's good enough that people might share. So we had a couple of guys came up with this Todd idea, and then me and another guy came up with the rally cry that we were thinking, how can we make that be kind of a viral online thing? The Todd thing didn't feel like a rally cry. They just didn't. So I was trying to get them to find a way to make that both things. And eventually we said, they don't have to be separate, one or the other. Maybe they work together. Mm-hmm. For 2 weeks, we have the Todd thing, and then it moves to this rally cry that they can own. So that's really
because the Todd thing was really an attention getting mnemonic. You know, it really just was, what is this? Kind of this annoying character that you would see out there in this. You know, you would never see him. You would hear him, you know, through tweets and Facebook posts and videos.
One of our messages, it was a billboard, is imagine waking up every night with a prick. Well, it's interesting because
that was their word.
News's line was one less prick. So they, you know, it's natural you're going to.
That's
come
their
up
competitor.
With similar,
yeah.
So you come up with similar ideas.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel like that. What they presented was something a positive rally cry. It was a cute line, but I didn't think it had the legs to everybody to rally around.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But this business is infamous for armchair quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the nature of the business.
Yeah. Hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah, everybody's got a better idea.
Yeah.
we'll be right back. Well, Jerry, you had mentioned earlier that Scott was like instrumental in the pitch, and Kim, you had said that nobody was shown in the pitch except for Jerry. So what I want to know is, how long do these pitches last? Because on the show, they narrow it down to like 3 minutes.
Well, I was nervous because we had gone to a client that earlier in the year to pitch a bit bigger piece of that business, and we were all involved, and it went long. And so I was very nervous that this pitch might go too long, and you only have a certain amount of time.
An hour.
It's 1 hour. Is that common, or is that?
A lot of times they'll give you a time frame because they got other people coming in that are going to pitch them the next, and so they try to keep it, you know. And they're fairly flexible, but for the most part, you try to stick to that. And what happens if you don't rehearse it and have it scripted, then you tend to just blab, and we all do. You know, we love to talk about what we know. And so I was nervous about that, but then
we make our entire podcast off. Totally understand.
As you can tell.
So during our rehearsals for this, we were done way under.
Like a half an hour.
Half an hour. And then I kind of got nervous because I thought, are we missing anything? Should we beef this up a little bit? And we felt really good with the idea. We didn't feel rushed at the last minute. Usually you're getting storyboards together and you just barely make it. And we had plenty of time and felt really good going in. So, but there's so much during the pitch. There's, you know, Kim does this wonderful setup, and then We've got Scott, who's getting them to understand how we can make this happen. This is it sounds confusing, but no, here's how we're going to make it real. And then Scott goes into all the social influence.
We had two Scotts, Scott Rowe, Scott Bishop. Yeah, it was confusing.
That's confusing. Should rename
and them. A client was Scott. Yeah. So Scott 1, 2, and 3.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, there's more to it that you just miss sometimes, and I understand that they're kind of telling a story, and people like to
absolutely hear stories. And they definitely latched on to you, and I feel like I came away understanding you or knowing you a little bit more, but I'm curious, Kim, what was more of your involvement throughout the process?
Mom.
Some of the
Well, I'm the managing principal of the agency, so and my background is kind of strategic planning and marketing. So I was kind of the account lead, so to speak, worked with our strategic planners on the insights, you know, really kind of and worked hand in glove with Jerry. I'm not creative. I'm the account side.
I was going to say, Does this
do the job it needs to do? How does this resonate with our audience? How do we execute this in a way that's, you know, really workable? And how can it have legs? So that's really my role. I can't write. I can't draw.
Were you ever on the creative side of it, or did you go into advertising?
I've always been on the strategic side of it, although I'm interactive. I love interactive. I can code. I can do social media. I can do any of that type of stuff, but I can't.
How did you originally come into the ad world then?
I came into the ad world, I mean, I worked client side for a few years after college. My degree's in journalism.
Okay.
And most of the way through an MBA, if I ever decide to finish, but probably won't. came in through media. I came in working in buying co-op media. And then that wasn't so fun. Moved to the account side, and in 1994 I formed our interactive division here. So then kind of, I love tech, you know, big into tech. So, yeah.
Yeah. During the whole episode, I understand she had a party at her house, and I didn't go cause I had to go back to Wichita with my family. But I heard that during the whole show, she missed most of it cause she was interacting with Twitter. Watching people, what their comments are.
Commenting back.
Yeah.
That's great.
Now you said you're from Wichita.
Well, I'm not. I lived there for 5 years.
Okay, and they brought you in, and the first account you put him on is the one with the television cameras following him?
Well, not really. I mean, he worked on all of our clients.
Yeah, but this was the first big pitch. And honestly, it was supposed to happen the week I started. They wanted to start then, and we were so busy here anyway. And I was like, absolutely not. There's no way I'm going to walk in my first day of the job. It's just... okay, you have a pitch, and here's... I don't even know who people are.
Well, they approached us last summer, and so they've been setting the schedule.
That's probably where we should start, is how did you get approached for the show itself?
And they approach you, you don't approach them.
No, we didn't approach them. They approached us last summer, and...
And by they, do you mean...
Studio Lampert, which is the production company that does Undercover Boss, and they're the production company that did this show.
Okay.
They've done quite a few different shows, and they contacted us last summer. How they picked us, I'm not sure, other than they knew the name. We had been out in L.A., had just finished some production, so maybe somebody mentioned us, but they had known the Bozell name, and they kind of liked our story. You know, we were part of the big leagues, and we bought ourselves back. It was sort of like underdog from Omaha. I think we were cast as... here's somebody in the middle of the country. Because if you look at the agency list, they were heavy New York, heavy, you know, West Coast, Los Angeles, and we had two in North Carolina, one in Houston, and us. You know, we were the Midwest represent.
And Toronto as well.
So, yeah, Toronto. So.
And your Midwesternness seemed to really affect this in a positive way.
Bizarre,
whatever that means.
I think it's just bizarre that they brought that up away.
Like,
and I thought, hey, Joe Muse was born in Detroit. I was born in Detroit. He went to school at Michigan State University, and he's from the Midwest. So to play this, we're the urbans and they're the...
Yeah. And we were the rurals. We're like, hey.
Yeah, it was just, it was weird to right away to even focus on who you're pitching against. I was interested in who I was pitching against, but at the end of the day, I'm not...
Oh, that's good TV editing, though.
Well, it is. But it's good TV editing. But I didn't bring it up on camera. I didn't say, "Oh, well, who are they?" And I just thought it was odd.
That was a weird way to start.
Yeah,
felt a little. It's just kind of strange.
Mm-hmm. So, did you guys have any when you guys were approached originally? Did you hear what client it was for right away?
No. In fact, our response when we were approached right away is, "Oh, well, for my dead body." That was my response, I guess I should say. Because all I could picture was Survivor or Bachelor. you know, thinking, oh, yeah, we need that in our industry. Yeah. But the production company, I talked to them, and they were really good people. I mean, they really kind of understood, and they said, this isn't what we're trying to do. We're trying to kind of chronicle it. It's less of a survivor type of show and more of just trying to get behind the scenes, which is hard to do because it's all in people's heads. How do you get behind the scenes? But, you know, they were actually very good. None of it was scripted. They didn't ask us, cut, do that again. They were flies on the wall. The whole process, they were just flies on the wall. They just followed it. So,
and how long did the process go between you being actually asked to do this and them actually filming? And at what time did they actually tell you who you'd be pitching for?
They asked us last fall. It was probably, or last summer, probably late last fall is when we said, okay. Then the scheduling was being worked out. We didn't know until... Well, they approached us in December thinking they wanted to do it in December. We were like, no. Approached us again. We probably knew 3 weeks before we were going to New York for a briefing.
It was
2 weeks?
Not even 2 weeks. It was less than 2 weeks. I know it was because I remember you saying, yeah. I said, well, that's like next week. It's
that's
the end
true.
Of next week.
We knew about a week in advance when we were going and who
and
we
who
were
was
pitching.
For. Yeah.
And that was it.
Unbelievable.
And so she came, she grabbed me and said, they called, they want us to go. It's
we're
it's
in New York next Thursday.
I was nervous because I had two art directors 2 weeks earlier left. So I had,
yeah, we were down people.
And I had just, but I had just hired a senior art director who I liked a lot. I felt really good about him. So fortunately we staffed up and we felt good enough. Once we determined we got enough people in place to do this, then I felt like, you know, okay, let's go.
I thought that seems kind of weird to me because most of the time when you're going to a pitch, it's like you've kind of been wanting to work with this company or something,
right.
Not just like that, oh, I'm pitching for this company I've never even heard of.
That's artificial, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that part of it was, it doesn't happen that way. Typically, yeah, you know the client well in advance. You know, you're never surprised. But, you know, we've done faster pitches than that one.
Oh, really?
We absolutely have. Yeah, we've, client has called, we've talked to them, we've said, okay, we want to have this conversation. 3 or 4 days later, we've actually been there with some general thinking or some general direction.
Yeah, and you usually don't. The way it ended up is they pitched first, then we pitched, and then they brought us back in an hour later. That doesn't usually happen. They tell you that day. You're, you know,
that never happens.
But I think, again, for the show, they, you know, if we could do this, it would be great to get your reaction in person. And
yeah, I'd even noticed that was the first episode I remember of this show where they seemed to tell them, like, while they were there, immediately,
yeah.
Or maybe
yeah.
Not. I thought
yeah.
They were the other
ones. One or two others.
Okay.
But
most of them, it seemed that they called them later.
And that's right. Typical. That is typical that you hear later, but it's you got to kind of wait. So, and then when we got there, we got into the building about 9 o'clock, and we didn't pitch until 3. Not we didn't really even know when we'd go, but I didn't think it would be that late because I was
sat in a room forever.
5 o'clock in the morning, practicing, getting ready. You're kind of ready to go, and then it's just so by noon I was out. I mean, I was laying down on a table, just my eyes.
He was laying on a credenza. He looked half dead. like, okay,
because I just you know you still want to stay focused, but yeah, I'm just tired, you know, really tired. So.
Mm-hmm. I read that you were an actor. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I pursued an acting career back, and I went to LA and did some commercials and some soap operas and things like that. But I just felt like there's a point at which I realized there's no guarantee here. I could be 50 still looking for work, and I just wanted to settle down at some point. I just felt like this is maybe not what I want to do. My sister worked in Detroit in advertising, and she talked to me about, hey, you ought to think about the creative department. You're creative, and this might be a good outlet for your creativity. So then that's what I pursued. And I guess within a few years, I got landed at Bates in Southern California working on the Hyundai account.
Oh, wow. There you go.
So that got at least my start there, and then just moved on from there.
One of my favorite parts of the show was Jerry singing.
Yeah.
So, do you have a background? Do you have a background in singing?
That was my least favorite. I do. Yeah, I
do
sing.
Okay.
But I was, you know, and I just thought, okay, they did it once and they did it twice, and I just thought, okay,
it's like acapella.
Yeah, and I just, I was trying different things. I didn't know we had a piece of music and they had a sing at the end. It just didn't work. So I was trying to give the music guy something else that I was thinking of, and then I scrapped that, and I did some voiceover, and then I scrapped that, and that's when we brought all the people in. I was just trying different things, you know. So that's part of it. You sort of
part of the creative process.
Yeah,
yeah. You do things that are
weird. I just felt like, oh, okay, that's
save for posterity.
Yeah,
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 yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. All right, we'll be right back after this break, and then we'll wrap the show up. Now, this is one of these things I also have to ask, because we're in design, and I don't understand advertising as well, but we spoke many times in our podcast against spec work, and it seems like these ad pitches are a lot of spec-based work. Is that common in advertising? Is this required in advertising? Is this something that the advertising people have a say against, or are they all for it?
Well, the ad world doesn't have the same kind of stance that the design world does relative to spec. I mean, I don't think any of us love it because we're giving away our intellectual property. It's frustrating. But it also is, you know, when you're talking about advertising, they want to know what you're thinking, how you would put it together, as opposed to it being a very specific type of assignment. Sometimes the assignments are really nebulous. And so there's a lot of speculative thinking that goes into a pitch to how do you solve the problem? And then, you know, how far you take it in terms of showing how you would solve a problem is something we debate all the time. I mean, I think a lot of us debate it. It's probably more common in the industry than any of us want it to be. But, yeah, we would prefer not to do it. In fact, our normal course is, no, we're not going to do it, but there are... It's all black and white.
Well, I know that when I saw this show for the first time, I told Ben immediately in my office, I said, that is where I would draw the line, because if they wanted to advertise me on national television, I wouldn't consider that being on the pitch spec work, even though you're doing spec work. So I do know there's a line. And I also know that advertising is quite a bit different than design. And this is one of the large differences between them. So I just wanted to see, you know, what the stance was.
And that being said, like, you guys didn't create a final product in your pitch. You know, those are still sketches. Those were still...
Concepts.
But it's a lot further than a design agency.
Right. It was further than we would give in a pitch, per se. Yeah. But we don't pitch like you guys do.
And ideally, it would be nice if somebody says, I love your work. I want to hire you to do... blank, you know, and then they absolutely trust us along the way. And that doesn't always happen either. Sometimes clients hire you and they still control what they want you to do. And that's a fine balance too, to hang on to that account, at the same time try to give them what they need, not just what they want.
So, right. Totally different.
Okay. Well, that being said, congratulations
for
winning the pitch, as it would be.
And they won, by the way. Another spoiler. I caught that.
And when is it that this stuff will actually roll out? Is JDRF?
It's already rolling out.
Okay. Where do people go to see the stuff that's already rolled out, and where can they go to start following what it's going to become?
Well, initially, there's the Be the Voice of One landing page, which is, I was spending an hour today just really starting to interact with it, because you can roll over and see all the tweets and the people participating.
It's a web page that pulls, aggregates tweets and shows the icons. It's, you know, the whole idea is, be part of the solution. And so that is already out there. It was launched 1 minute after the show concluded, or actually 1 minute before the show concluded.
You mean right about the time that you mentioned the website on
We won. Yeah, we couldn't launch it until the conclusion of the show.
And the other thing we wanted to do, because there's been a lot of chatter, and it's just our own people in our own industry, but saying how, you know, you just did it for the publicity, and thinking, well, we are an ad agency and we think we have something to show that's of value. Yeah, why wouldn't we do this? There's a risk because we don't control the edit. Yeah. But a lot of them were pointing to that, and I thought we were the first nonprofit, and was it really an opportunity for us to get a lot of attention sent to our website? So we determined, instead of accepting that attention, we would black out our website for 24 hours
and we did.
Direct it right back to JDRF. So,
oh, wow.
We had a landing page that said, one day, one cause.
Yeah, one voice.
One voice.
We watched the show a day late, so we missed all of it.
Yeah. So it was up from the time the show started until last night when we launched the new site.
And I just thought it was, if we're really concerned about our client and doing the best for their interest, and that, plus the fact that their giving is down 75%. So much of what we presented to them, while we didn't really know what budget they were in, has been scaled back. So it's still yet to be determined what scale of work we'll be able to do for them.
But it's continuing. Yeah. We're doing, you know, kind of messaging, and we're doing, obviously, the web and digital. You can see our whole pitch on Bozell.com on our site. You can see the pitch deck that we had. And then, you know, we're continuing to work and at AMC. Well, no, so there's not much there. Yeah. And, you know, we're continuing to work with the client on how is this going to roll out. So,
What is it you guys learned the most from this client about type 1 diabetes or what we can do about it?
God, we learned so much. I think the biggest insight between the client and the interviews and all the backgrounding we did is kind of a feeling of determination that people who have type 1 diabetes have to not be defined by it. But at the same time, the fear of what people might think of them. There's a lot of people who feel like people look at them and they mix it up with type 2 diabetes and they think, well, you could control this. You could have avoided this if you had eaten better, if you had... and then fear of discrimination. We had a couple people we interviewed who were just terrified that if their employer found out they had this, they're a heavy user of healthcare, would they be on the list of layoffs if the times got tough because they were heavy users of healthcare? That was huge. So it affects a lot of people in a lot of ways. And I think that was kind of an eye-opener for us. Just, you know, you think of it as a disease and that it's out there, you know, and that people aren't fearful of it. No. There's a fear and a stigma that I think was pretty eye-opening for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were great clients. I mean,
great
they really
client.
Are. Scott worked, owns his own agency, and so having him understand what we go through.
Scott was, 3, our client.
Yeah.
Right. I can picture him now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was
he's the M in VML.
Because I knew he got it. I knew he really understood where we were coming from. And you could tell even during the pitch. There was a point, and they didn't show this, but after we presented our idea or in the midst of it, they said, you know what else we could do? And they started joining in on the conversation. And I knew that's a really good sign because they're already thinking about how it could.
They also had to edit that out too.
Yeah.
For the suspense.
Yeah. Instead, the awkward moment.
Yeah.
That's right. That's funny.
Was it a little bit weird coming back to the office and not having cameras around anymore?
Yeah. They came back with us. From New York, from the pitch, they
came back
with us.
Then why didn't they show you guys with the whole group?
They actually filmed it,
but I think it was more spontaneous, the phone call that we made when we called the agency.
They actually filmed them responding here a day later just so they could get, if they needed it, they could get that. So that was one kind of a setup thing. But it was a Saturday, and we didn't have as many, and it was a snow day, so we didn't have as many people here. And I suspect they just thought it looked better to just to hear them kind of cheering and our reaction.
I felt the way it ended really well.
Yeah, I just thought it was different than the other shows. So yeah. I was like, did they not?
I think the other shows weren't told at that time. I think that the other agencies weren't told that day.
Yeah.
So I think we were one of the few that knew while we were still in New York that we won.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the others were called on the phone with the big duck duck.
And because it was a Friday when we presented for the crew to come back and wait 2 days and then Monday us come and tell the team that it would have been
first of all
strange.
We couldn't keep a secret.
Yeah, you gave it. Yeah, we would call them right away, so they couldn't have done it anyway.
Now for those who watched the pitch, everyone probably remembers that Jerry says he has 7 kids and 19 grandkids. Congratulations, by the way. I'm actually one of 7
kids. You
gotta
say, like, congratulations, like 30 times. This is ridiculous.
Take the next year.
Look how young he is.
I know, right? How does this even work? But as a family man, and I'm also married and have a child of my own, I'd like to hear more about how do you balance your work with your family, and do you?
Yeah, I do. I think that's what I like about Bozell too, is they have a, you know, if you need to bring your kids in, we've had kids come in. Just, hey, I can't find a babysitter.
And dogs.
If I have to go, hey, I've got to go home early. It happens all the time. That's fine. You know, I think as long as we're doing our job and getting our work done, and sometimes, you know, it takes late hours and weekends, and you try to manage that at the same time. But I don't wear working in the ad business as a badge of honor because I missed out on my family life. That's just ridiculous. If you've got something wrong with who you are, if that is your main driving force. Now, if you don't have a family and this is what you want to do, then I understand that. But for me, yeah, you know, going in, it's a fine balance. But if you don't have that, then it makes you, I don't know, you're just more well-rounded. If you can just let it go, go home, have fun with your family, and then come back and get
And we encourage that. Because, you know, all work makes you very dull. So work-life balance makes people a heck of a lot more creative and happy and passionate about what they do.
Yeah.
So. Well, you won't hear any arguments from me.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So. No, well, Kim, Jerry, we really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Listeners, we really appreciate it. If you have any comments, questions, whatnot, 36point.com. We will be back. Actually, I think we have one more show to record, and then we'll start recording live in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see everybody here next month or later this month. I don't know when this should
be. It's so hard to predict the future.
Yeah. We'll see you what happens.
See you then.